Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Freedom of speech is a bedrock principle of American democracy. It is enshrined in and guaranteed by the First Amendment to the Constitution. And it is the First Amendment because without free speech, we have nothing. The murder of Charlie Kirk, who was, among other things, a free speech advocate, has led to attacks on this cherished right. Jimmy Kimmel was taken off the air for a brief period because of something he said in a setup to a joke that was misinterpreted by the MAGA right, by Donald Trump, and most strikingly, by Federal Communications Commission Chair Brendan Carr, who not only applauded ABC's decision, but reiterated statements by Donald Trump threatening the broadcast licenses of ABC-owned and affiliated stations if they didn't find a way to, quote, change conduct, to take action, frankly, on Kimmel, end quote, adding that if they didn't, the FCC could do this the easy way or the hard way. A threat like that is not only un-American, it is overstepping the limits of the law. The FCC's authority over programming content is limited, according to its own website, due to the First Amendment and the Communications Act. And in fact, FCC Chairman Carr sang a different tune just prior to taking office, making comments like these.
I think you can draw a pretty clear line, and the Supreme Court has done this for decades, that, you know, our First Amendment, our free speech tradition, protects, you know, almost all speech.
Americans have been living through an unprecedented surge in censorship the last couple of years. We need to return to free speech, diversity of opinions. Does it mean that everybody has to see speech they don't like? No, not at all.
Diversity of opinion is so important in this country, and it's going to be one of my top priorities.
Even Donald Trump trumpeted that concept. On the first day of his return to office, he signed an executive order entitled Restoring Freedom of Speech and Ending Federal Censorship, in which he accused the previous administration of using terms like misinformation and disinformation to suppress speech that didn't align with its preferred narrative. Well, now he too is singing a different tune. Here's what he said in the Oval Office to ABC's Jonathan Carl.
The news makes millions of dollars. ABC, your network. I mean, your network wrote very badly about me, and they had to pay me $16 million.
So do you think you have a right, or that Brendan Carr has a right to take away the license?
No, I think Brendan Carr is a patriot. I think Brendan Carr is a courageous person. I think Brendan Carr doesn't like to see the airwaves be used illegally and incorrectly and purposely horribly. Does it like to see a person that won the election in a landslide get 97% bad publicity before the election?
The 97% figure is in question, but as you know, he did not win the election in a landslide, but by a solid margin in the Electoral College, and he won the popular vote by a mere 1.6 percentage points, one of the narrowest margins in modern history. But the important part of that quote is an allegation he has repeated many times, that networks that say things he does not like are doing so illegally. The ability to criticize our leaders is another bedrock principle of a democracy. If you can't criticize the leader, you live in an autocracy, or worse. Kimmel is back, but the threats to free speech and to broadcasters continue. So this hour, a discussion about free speech. What is guaranteed by the Constitution? What responsibilities come with free speech? What speech may have parameters placed on it? And the intersection of government, the media, and free speech. We're joined by Will Creeley. He's the legal director of FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, a nonprofit or a nonpartisan organization defending and promoting free speech. Adam Serwer is a staff writer for The Atlantic, who wrote that publication's recent article, The Constitution Protects Jimmy Kimmel's Mistake, Free Speech is Under Assault. And Donald Bryson is CEO of the John Locke Foundation, a conservative think tank promoting individual liberty and limited government. They also publish Carolina Journal. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. It's radio, so you gotta talk. Adam, I'm gonna start with you. Let's clear something up that has gotten muddled in all this discussion swirling around the controversy over Jimmy Kimmel's suspension. Disney ABC is a private company. They can do what they want. They can suspend him, they can fire him, they can put parameters on what he can and cannot say. Clearly they have not done that, but they can do that because they're a private company. But they can't be told what to censor by the government. The president can't tell them what he can and cannot say. But was he suspended because of the pressure from the government or because of pressure from two affiliate groups, Nexstar and Sinclair, that told ABC we're not carrying his show?
Well, in my view, this actually shows pretty succinctly how the fusion of government and corporate power can infringe on Americans' free speech rights. So Sinclair and Nexstar, Sinclair is a conservative-owned firm, that's no secret, and Nexstar has some business affairs that are coming before government regulators. And so they have an incentive when the FCC commissioner goes on to a conservative podcast and starts talking like a mafioso threatening Disney, to follow those directions. And that is an infringement on free speech, because what you're doing, I mean, I think the legal term for it is jawboning, but I think basically, you know, what he's doing is saying, you know, we're the government and we're going to come after you unless you pull this guy off the air. And after, these two affiliate owners pulled out, Disney had a big incentive to yank Kimmel off. Now, they deserve credit for putting him back on and allowing him to elaborate on what he felt was a pretty direct threat to free speech. I mean, when you listen to Donald Trump, he basically thinks it's illegal to make fun of him. That is his position as far as the FCC is concerned. It's illegal to criticize him. It's illegal to make fun of him. And Jimmy Kimmel is not even a journalist. So this question of news coverage is actually a red herring. This is a man making jokes, and he's allowed to make jokes from whatever perspective he wants. And if ABC doesn't like those jokes, they can hire another host. But what cannot happen, what must not happen, is the president cannot behave like some sort of, religious leader enforcing a blasphemy law where you're not allowed to laugh at Donald Trump.
I'm not sure anybody really knows the inner workings of this, but to be clear, ABC, the network, does not have a license to broadcast. They don't need a license to broadcast. They simply pump out programming that are carried by stations that do need a license to broadcast. ABC owns stations, therefore those stations have a license, and those licenses could be in jeopardy, I suppose, if the government wanted to take action against them. Sinclair and Nexstar also have many, many, many stations. We'll talk about that in a minute, how many they have, that also have licenses to broadcast. So, Will, was it on the part of Sinclair, which is a very conservative ownership group, was it this fear of having their licenses revoked or suspended by the FCC if they carried Jimmy Kimmel that drove them to not carry Jimmy Kimmel? Or was it their own internal politics? They disagreed with Kimmel, therefore they want no part of it.
Mike, it could be either or. I think it could be indistinguishable. I think that there is a clear incentive for them to score political points, both with their audience, perhaps, and with the president and with the Federal Communications Commission to grandstand in this way, to say we will not broadcast Kimmel. We will demand an apology before we subject our viewers to his jokes, as Adam said, and that's exactly what they were. They were jokes. So it's really kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. I'm not sure it makes a concrete difference here. Sinclair is a private broadcaster. They can decide for themselves what they air and why. And the recourse will be for viewers to say, wait a second, you are supposed to give us ABC. Where's our ABC? And the market will speak in that way. But as Adam says, and I fully agree, this does demonstrate the dangers of a consolidated corporate media environment. It's an easy pressure point. If the president says jump, a lot of stations are going to say how high.
Well, I guess the good news for the White House is that the president can't see the Jimmy Kimmel show at the moment because Sinclair owns WJLA in Washington, D.C., Channel 7, and they're not carrying Jimmy Kimmel at the moment. Donald, Sinclair operates 38 ABC affiliates around the country. Nexstar operates 28 ABC stations. In total, that's 66 stations refusing to air a very expensive to produce network program. A quarter of the network's stations will not be carrying that show at the moment. That seems to be unsustainable in the long term. Whether those station groups are motivated by fear of the FCC or their own politics, is this a backdoor? If you can convince stations not to do something, is that a backdoor to controlling free speech?
Well, I think there are two answers to that question. If as is the case, I think, with Sinclair, they were actually offended by what Jimmy Kimmel said. And if it was the lead up to a joke, it was a very poor joke, right? And I think it's within the market of ideas for people to make the choice about whether or not to carry Jimmy Kimmel or not. Assuming that, you know, Sinclair's contract with ABC allows for this and all that, I have no idea because I don't work for either of those. But if that's what the pressure is, and Sinclair's just like, look, I just don't like this. We don't want to air him. It's allowed in our contract. We'll do something else. I think that's fair game. And, you know, speech has consequences in that way. But if Sinclair or Nexstar are acting because they were receiving threats from the FCC, then that actually is chilling free speech. And that's when it becomes problematic. There's the marketplace of ideas where consequences have actions. And then there's the government pressure of it. And that's when we're getting into, you know, First Amendment territory.
But Donald, I'm going to stick with you for a second. I'm going to disagree with you about the setup to the joke, and I'm going to disagree with Adam and something he wrote about the setup to the joke being, I forgot the words you used, but being incorrect. We'll talk about that in a second. But you're a conservative. Sinclair is a conservative-based organization, a group of stations. They have the right to do whatever they want to, but is preempting Jimmy Kimmel, which is removing his free speech rights, essentially, and removing him, his ability to speak to their viewers, is that a conservative principle? Or is the more conservative principle letting him say what he wants to say, airing what he says, and if viewers don't like it and they don't watch, then canceling him for low ratings?
No, I'll push back on that, and I'll say Coca-Cola sets up a new factory to produce just, I don't know, tiger blood flavored Sprite. I'm making something up, obviously, right?
Sounds good to me.
And they don't want it. Customers run it. Board of directors says pull the plug. Well, right. The people at that factory and the people who built that factory don't have an inherent right to continue selling their product if the company that owns it or has the production of it or the distribution of it, that's the best way to phrase it, has the distribution of it, doesn't want to continue to carry it. Now, again, there's a lot of deals. As a conservative and as a free marketeer, I believe that contracts should absolutely be honored, right? And I don't know what the details of the contracts are. If it says in Sinclair's contract or Nexstar's contract that they should and they have to air everything that ABC puts out, then they're going to have to honor their contract. And there's going to be some litigation on that. And that's just how the way the world works. But I think that in this case, they are, in a sense, a customer. And customers, you know, will decide what is and is not on the market and what price they'll pay for it.
So Adam Serwer is with us. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic who wrote that publication's recent article, The Constitution Protects Jimmy Kimmel's Mistake. You began that article in The Atlantic about this, quoting the same piece of the setup to a joke that aired on most of the networks to illustrate what got him in hot water in the first place.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
So you write, quote, this was at best an unconfirmed rumor at the time, and as more evidence has emerged, seems flatly incorrect. Kimmel should have chosen his words more carefully. What do you mean, and I have 30 seconds, what do you mean by unconfirmed rumor?
I just mean that the political inclinations of the shooter were not to the right, and I think that had become clear.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about free speech, particularly in light of the recent temporary suspension of Jimmy Kimmel on ABC and the fallout from that, with Will Creeley, the legal director of the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. Donald Bryson is the CEO of the John Locke Foundation, and Adam Serwer is the staff writer for The Atlantic, who wrote a recent article about all of this. And I limited your free speech rights here, Adam, by asking you a question that you could not answer in the time allotted. So I asked you, what do you mean by the quote in your article, unconfirmed rumors, upon which that opening setup for the joke was based? What does that mean?
Well, there was a lot of speculation in liberal corners of the internet that, in fact, the person who assassinated Charlie Kirk was, you know, to Charlie Kirk's right, and that this was some sort of ideological conflict. And I'm not sure if that's what Jimmy Kimmel meant, but I think it sort of left that impression, and it would have been appropriate for him to say, you know, I got that wrong. But the point that I was trying to make, and that I make later in that essay, is that, you know, the landmark free speech case, New York Times v. Sullivan, is about segregationists trying to silence criticism by focusing on minor factual errors on comments of public affairs. So the point is, you know, if everybody's afraid of making a minor error while discussing, you know, issues of public import, then you don't have free speech. If you're afraid that, you know, state officials of some kind, government officials, are going to clamp down on you or threaten you, then people simply are not going to speak. So the point was that, you know, that free speech rights, in order to actually be exercised, there has to be a lot of leeway for people to say what they believe without being punished by the state. And one of the things that made Carr's threat so insidious is that even if this does not turn out with the Trump administration trying to pull licenses, those threats themselves have a chilling effect where people will like not want to say things on air that might offend the Trump administration, because who knows when they might end up, you know, a target of, you know, someone in this government, all of whom and really enjoy posting on social media and having their followers go after whoever they're talking about.
I want to make sure I understood you correctly before I move on. Did you say that in the early days of this event, immediately after Charlie Kirk's assassination, that there was speculation on the left about the political affiliation and or motivations of the shooter, or was it people on the right?
I think people, both sides, were speculating about the motivations of the shooter without any information. But to the extent that I saw, there were in some liberal quarters of the internet, there was some sort of theory that this person was a member of a far right faction who had assassinated Charlie Kirk for
reasons.
That's
not what he said. That's not what Jimmy Kimmel said. I'm going to throw Chris, our producer, a curveball here and ask him to play that cut again, cut three. Please play cut three again so we can hear exactly what Jimmy Kimmel said.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what one of them means. I think that's a fair interpretation of that statement.
Because I didn't interpret it that way. I saw it as people on the right racing to distance themselves, because on that Sunday's Meet the Press, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham said his murder was part of a, quote, effort by the radical left to dehumanize the MAGA movement. There was and is still no proof of that. Arizona Republican State Representative Nick Cupper retweeted a post saying the Democratic Party is a national security threat. Again, no proof of that. Stephen Miller said he was going after left-wing organizations that are promoting violence. No proof of that. And South Carolina Republican Representative Nancy Mace had the well-publicized angry dust-up with reporters on Capitol Hill, saying that with no proof that, quote, some leftist lunatic put a bullet through Kirk's neck. And later, she had a much calmer exchange with another reporter in which she laid the blame on several different things.
We're talking what, Antifa? We call it Trantifa. It's probably Trantifa, right? No one is surprised by this. The Democrats have fueled the violence that we're seeing in this country today. They created the murder. They caused the murder of Charlie Kirk. And I don't want to hear a thing about Democrats pointing the finger at us or Donald Trump. They can sit right back down with that. This blood is on their hands. They own this.
So, Will, just like Kimmel, Nancy Mace had a right to say those things, no matter how disgusted Democrats may have been about them or how incorrect she was in her assessment. Is one side better at dealing with free speech that they don't like than the other, or are they equally messed up?
Well, I've been doing this work for almost 20 years, and my organization has defended speakers on either side of the political chasm repeatedly. My standard line here, Mike, is when I meet somebody at a party, they say, "What do you do?" I say, "I'm a First Amendment attorney." And they kind of recoil because they don't know quite how that sounds. They don't know where to slot that. And I try to put them at ease and say, "Look, I don't know your politics. I don't know where you've been serving in the culture war or anything like that. But I can just say that no matter what they are, I've got five cases that my group has done that'll make you think I'm a freedom fighter. And I've got five cases that my group has done that'll make you think I'm everything wrong with America." I'm not going to bestow the mantle of free speech champion on any elected official or any political party. The truth is that both have plenty to answer for. But I will say the current moment is unlike anything I've seen. The scope, severity, volume, and frankly, audacity of what we're seeing now from the White House dwarfs anything in my experience. The closest parallel, I think, would be McCarthy-era blacklisting. But even that was one senator. Here we have almost an all-of-government effort to attack political opponents, whether that's Harvard University, where you had reporting indicating that federal agency heads were meeting to figure out how to inflict pain on Harvard for standing up for their First Amendment rights as a private institution to defend free expression and academic freedom. Or the latest instance with the FCC chairman acting like a mob boss. You know, to appropriate one of Adam's phrases from the first administration, I think the chill is in many ways the point here. The idea that folks need to think twice before talking. We're receiving reports of reporters being, looked at, their social media posts looked at, pieces being pulled. I mean, I think there's a story here that we're going to be telling for the next 20 years. Now, one worry I have, since I plan on doing this work from here till I quit, is that we've opened a Pandora's box, and the public will get increasingly comfortable with elected officials jawboning, threatening, and worse. But we will do whatever we can to stop it.
Isn't that the playbook? Isn't that the point? Isn't that how it works with authoritarian leaders? They who come from democratic traditions, they normalize things that are anti-democratic. So we don't know. We're like the frog in the pot of boiling water.
You got it. I mean, every day I start to think with my colleagues, imagine if we had just this morning's news cycle back in 2012. We would have been busy all day. Now I say, give it 6 hours, we'll be talking about something else. What's amazing to me in this Kimmel dust-up is that it feels as though the assassination of a partisan speaker on campus, Charlie Kirk, that feels about 2 months ago. And I think really is to our ultimate detriment is that we don't actually sit and think about the gravity of what's happened here with the federal government's response.
And that's the downside, because we should be concentrating on the use of political violence and the inexcusable use of political violence and the tragedy that resulted because of that political violence, not just to Charlie Kirk, but his family and his children. And instead, we're talking about Jimmy Kimmel and free speech.
Just yesterday, Mike, when the shooting, which I still am very confused about, I've read a number of articles I don't understand, but the shooting at the ICE facility in Dallas, I can't tell what the hell's going on there. But already you've seen a rush by the federal government to characterize it as a quote-unquote ideological attack. And, it's a very difficult environment to defend free expression rights when you got this kind of tidal wave of censorship and threats to keep your mouth shut or else.
Because we have freedom of speech, we have late night comedians. We have comedians of all stripes. They can work anytime they want to, any time of the day they want to, and they've always made fun of the government. Donald Trump has been a particularly easy target because of the way he conducts himself and the things that he says. And late night comedians have been brutal against him. Saturday Night Live has taken aim at him, but two hosts in particular have really made their bones on taking issue with Trump. And that is Stephen Colbert, who we all know what happened to Stephen Colbert, and CBS is positioning his cancellation as economic. We'll never know the real reason. And Jimmy Kimmel, we know what happened to him. They have been merciless toward Donald Trump. And I want to play the section of Kimmel's monologue that got him in trouble. We keep hearing that little clip that I played. All the networks play that over and over and over and over, the setup to the joke. But I think we need to hear where that setup took us, where he took that joke, to really understand what's going on here.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it. In between the finger pointing, there was grieving. On Friday, the White House flew the flags at half staff, which got some criticism. But on a human level, you can see how hard the president is taking this.
My condolences on the loss of your friend Charlie Kirk. May I ask, sir, personally, how are you holding up over the last day and a half, sir?
I think very good. And by the way, right there, you see all the trucks. They've just started construction of the new ballroom for the White House, which is something they've been trying to get, as you know, for about 150 years. And it's going to be a beauty.
Yes. Okay. He's at the fourth stage of grief, construction. Demolition. Construction. This is not how an adult grieves the murder of someone he called a friend. This is how a four-year-old mourns a goldfish.
Will, you're the conservative on the panel here, at least the one who identifies themselves as such. He has a right to say that. The audience found it humorous. He's using an actual news clip of the president who shifts focus away from Charlie Kirk to construction of a ballroom. What's your reaction to all of this? What's wrong with that?
I'm assuming.
Donald Bryce.
Sorry, Will's a conservative. I've learned things. Good to know. I think everything's in bad taste, right? The fact that, and this is not unique to Jimmy Kimmel or Stephen Colbert, the fact that we have this strange fascination with making light of things that are tragic. It is bizarre to me. The fact that Kimmel thought it was appropriate to make the joke is strange to me. He has the absolute freedom to say that, and that's the topic of the show, freedom of speech. But it doesn't mean it wasn't in bad taste. Also, I don't know, I have no explanation for what the president said either. It makes no sense to me either. Candidly, Kimmel's reaction to that was actually sort of funny, but the lead up to it wasn't.
But you need the lead up to put the president's reaction into context.
No, you can say that. The president is clearly grieving Charlie Kirk. Here's what he said. And then the joke tells itself, right? But he is making aspersions, trying to assign blame. Now, he has the freedom to do that, but that doesn't mean that there won't be consequences or repercussions with viewership or with the companies that have to carry you on the air. I just think it's all around unfortunate that we have this sort of view that we can make light of tragic things.
So, Adam, in your article, you said that Jimmy Kimmel should have apologized, but at the time of publication, he wasn't able to because he'd been taken off the air. He returned on Tuesday night, and he did a 30-minute monologue in which he did apologize on several occasions for several different things. And he apologized if he had hurt anyone in that monologue. But you point out that instead of being given the opportunity before he was yanked, he was, quote, silenced by a government and its allies that want to control what you say, what you do, and what you think. ABC succumbed to pressure, at least for a moment, but the pressure was coming, I think, from two affiliate groups more than the FCC, which we've already talked about. Has the pushback from the public, given those efforts to have what you call a state-backed campaign of repression, has it given some pushback on those efforts to kind of put the pause button on that? Do you think this was a misstep on the part of the Trump administration?
Well, certainly, if they were trying to shut Jimmy Kimmel up, you know, his the video of that monologue is getting lots of views. His audience was four times larger than it usually is based on the ratings. But there's actually two things I want to say. One is that Kimmel is, you know, in that joke, he's clearly horrified by Trump's reaction. And he's clearly been horrified by the killing. I mean, I think that's without question. You know, he choked up discussing the murder of Charlie Kirk on air. It's not like he thinks that's funny. What he finds sort of grimly funny is the president's inability to grieve the way a normal, you know, most of us probably would, and therefore questioning whether he's grieving at all, which is, you know, that's the point of the joke. I want to clarify that that's not, you know, he's not trying to make fun of, you know, what happened to Charlie Kirk, which is horrible and not funny at all. But as far as, you know, how far this is going to go, look, I mean, you played earlier clips of Republicans saying that the Democratic Party is a terrorist organization. I think really a lot depends on what happens now and how much this and how seriously Republican people in the administration are intent on using their power to suppress their political opposition. Now, whether or not, you know, you know, as Jimmy Kimmel said in his monologue, you know, the important thing is not my show, it's that you can have a show like this. So the question from now going on is whether the administration is going to keep doing things like this, not, you know, whether or not in this particular episode they succeeded in silencing Jimmy Kimmel, because they obviously didn't. The question is, are they going to be able to use this authority to silence their political opponents, because we're sort of getting used to, you know, this is just something that Trump does.
Well, this is
Mike, can I jump in there real fast?
Sure.
Sorry. I feel like this is a great example, and I agree with a lot of what Adam said there, but this is a great example of how the Republican Party of 2025 has largely abandoned its roots as a small government leaning organization. Since the days of Barry Goldwater, they've talked about how the government needs to be smaller and less intrusive. And yet, you know, it's sort of like Lord of the Rings, right? Who's going to destroy the ring of power when we get to the mountain? And nobody wants to do it. And all they're doing is, you know, now they've talked about weaponizing the FCC. And look, the FCC has an important job. They need to keep our airwaves clear, our emergency systems reliable, and our infrastructure safe. But when the FCC strays into deciding what is acceptable and what crosses a constitutional line, particularly when you're a presidential nominee, the FCC needs to get out of that constitutional line altogether and get back into infrastructure.
But it's not just the freedom of speech that's being attacked. It's not just the networks that are being attacked and sued. The Trump administration has launched campaigns against major universities. They've come faster and faster against government agencies, against law firms, of course, against the news media and now the networks. And many of those organizations have capitulated. And experts on the subject of authoritarianism will tell you that you cannot give in, because if you do, things get worse. They never stop. And when we come back, Will, I want you to talk about that, because you're a First Amendment attorney. Do you win most of your cases? Do you think that ABC saying, no, we're putting him back, will send a message to others who may have continued to capitulate? We'll get an answer to that question in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcharlotteregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about free speech. Donald Bryson is with us. He's the CEO of the John Locke Foundation and publisher of Carolina Journal. Will Creeley is legal director for the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. And Adam Serwer is a staff writer for The Atlantic. So, Will, I was talking about the push toward intimidating institutions that have been with us forever, universities, law firms, media companies, et cetera, by the Trump administration. And most of the time, they have capitulated. ABC did not capitulate. Mm-hmm. Will this send a message to other captains of industry to stop capitulating, to fight back? And as a First Amendment attorney who takes these cases to court, do you find yourself winning more often than not?
Well, the proverbial jury is still out on that latter question, Mike. We are in court right now against the federal government and the administration, challenging the provisions of the Immigration Nationality Act the government has been relying upon to snatch students off the street for writing op-eds. We're representing the Stanford Daily and two individuals proceeding under pseudonym That case it was filed last month. We'll see. We just got the DOJ's reply last night. We're also representing the pollster Ann Seltzer, formerly of the Des Moines Register, who is defending a suit brought by then candidate, now President Trump, challenging her for predicting, turned out incorrectly via her polling, that Vice President Harris would win the state of Iowa. They're using a bizarre and frankly dangerous theory that getting a poll wrong, to Adam's point earlier about New York Times v. Sullivan and the right to get details wrong, especially if you're a pollster, they're arguing that the incorrect poll was fraud in some kind of deceptive product theory, which is nuts, frankly, to use a legal term. So we're still in court on those two cases, and we will file more. So stay tuned. But to your earlier point, earlier question as to whether ABC's restoration of Kimmel will give other networks some backbone, you know, cynically, I really just ask a core question: how much money is on the line? I'm afraid that when corporations have big financial stakes and they're worried about an administration that's willing to, as Donald, I think, very aptly put it, weaponize the federal government to extort ideological concessions, we've seen corporations happy to do that. ABC had, I think, at least a better than average case of winning in the Stephanopoulos defamation suit that the president alluded to last week as beating ABC once before, and he'll test them again. You know, likewise with the Paramount merger, where it seems certainly as though CBS's lawyers were ready to fight, but did not, because the interest in selling and having the merger approved overrode that basic interest in standing up for journalists at 60 Minutes who were engaged in standard editing practices before being, frankly, shaken down by the FCC. So behavior that gets rewarded will be repeated. My organization participated as friend of the court in both the Columbia University case brought by the American Association of University Professors and others, and the Harvard University case, which is Harvard itself standing up for itself. Look, when an administration feels emboldened to bully private actors, the only thing that they can do for the good of society is to stand up for themselves. Yesterday, or 2 days ago now, Google admitted that the Biden administration had leaned on it to remove content about COVID. That was wrong. The Biden administration should not have done that. Google should have stood up and fought for itself. Likewise, ABC should stand up and fight for itself. When the administration comes ready to bully you, I think you have an obligation to freedom of expression values writ large, even outside of the First Amendment, to stand up and fight back. Harvard did so to its great credit and received, I think, an absolutely correct ruling from the Federal District Court of Massachusetts as a result. Harvard is uniquely well situated to fight back with an endowment larger than many countries, older, and Harvard, of course, older than the country itself. But that's the kind of courage and backbone that this moment requires. Otherwise, we're cooked, as my 11-year-old son would say.
Yeah. Brendan Carr, the chairman of the FCC, has said that we should expect, quote, a massive shift in dynamics in the media ecosystem, and that as chair, he will preside over that shift because he, quote, is fully aligned with the agenda that Trump is running. That's a quote. And this includes his willingness to punish media companies if Donald Trump believes they are out of line. Donald, do you have a political refuge anymore? Because this doesn't sound conservative to me, and I'm sure the Democratic Party doesn't sound conservative to you. Where do conservatives go with this? What should be what should be conservatives' reaction to all of this?
Repugnancy would be the reaction. I think what you're seeing is there's disagreement on the right on what conservatism means. I'm of the John Locke Foundation, who was a classic liberal, and that has generally the tradition of American conservatism from, I would say, probably Barry Goldwater, maybe a little bit before, up through Ronald Reagan, and George, it changed a little bit around George W. Bush. But the idea is that what we are conserving is individual freedom and individual liberty, and that an encroaching government should be fought back on. And, you know, like Reagan said, government's not the answer to the problem. Government is the problem. That's sort of the freedom conservative credo. But now what we have are national conservatives who believe that this idea that they have of what America is as a nation, even though that is probably ever evolving, whatever they have in their mind as America as a nation, that is what should be conserved. And they're willing to use the power and lever of government to keep up that agenda and whatever it is. I think that the FCC is a wild mistake. And other than making sure there aren't redundancies on the airwaves and the emergency systems work, that's about all the FCC should be doing. But anytime you give the FCC the leeway to say what is appropriate or what isn't appropriate to be on air, government's power inevitably expands. And I think that everybody should be talking about pushing back.
The FCC came along primarily in the 20s or 30s because stations needed to stay on their frequency, because if you just started a station, then you'd have all these overlapping signals and you wouldn't be able to hear or understand anything. But everything we do is based on the Communications Act of 1934. And in that act, broadcast stations, those terrestrial broadcast stations, radio and television, are licensed to serve in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. But some of Chairman Carr's comments about stations not operating in the public interest when they broadcast statements that are unfriendly to the administration have seemed to cross a line. It seems to me, a Democrat on the commission, Ana Gomez, the only Democrat on the commission, has called on Congress to more directly clarify what broadcasting in the public interest means. Adam, do we know what it means? I thought we always knew what it meant, but clearly we don't.
Well, I think in this case it means talking about how smart and handsome and brilliant Mr. Trump is. That's in the public interest, according
to that saying, though, Adam.
To Brennan Carr. I mean, you know, the public interest question, you know, the public determines that. That's what a marketplace of ideas is. If people don't like what you're broadcasting, they can watch something else, especially now, especially today. What they are trying to do is create an information environment where basically they control everything that goes into Americans' brains. So our decisions are all based on information that is fed to us by the Trump administration or a private company aligned with the Trump administration. And that, you know, is the exact dynamic that the First Amendment was written to prevent. I mean, that's why there is a clause in the First Amendment about the freedom of the press. Like, it is to allow a multiplicity of opinions, not to, you know, it specifically says, you know, we don't want the government deciding what people talk about. And this is really, you know, in some ways, the talk about public interest stuff is. You know, completely divorced from the traditional American understanding of that term. It has been replaced with basically the public interest is whatever Mr. Trump, the avatar of the American people, decides is in the public interest. And that, you know, I just can't accept that. I don't think anybody else should.
And just quickly, Mike, on that point, the Supreme Court has weighed in here. Long ago, the Supreme Court said, and I quote, the public interest standard necessarily invites reference to First Amendment principles, and quote, the First Amendment must inform and give shape to the manner in which Congress exercises its regulatory power in this area. And the Communications Act explicitly says you can't censor. It denies the FCC the power of censorship. I mean, we are in new and uncharted territory, as the chairman knows darn well. So yeah, the threat is real, and the lodestar for the First Amendment is viewpoint neutrality. It means the government doesn't put a finger on the scale and pick winners and losers in the marketplace of ideas. But that's exactly what we've seen over the past 6-7 months.
Donald, I know you want to talk about this.
Oh, no, I really do, because, you know, next year we celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, the founding of the nation. The First Amendment to the United States Constitution is in direct conflict and came up because of British sedition laws, that the administrators of the British Empire could talk about what in the press or what, you know, public gathering was sedition, wasn't sedition, and those people could be imprisoned. That's why we have the First Amendment altogether, and this seems to fly in the face of the original purpose of the First Amendment. And
on that note, if I may, I'm sorry, but my lawyers will laugh here. I can't let a segment go by without mentioning John Peter Zenger, who was the publisher of the New York Weekly Journal, I think it was, back in pre-revolutionary times, back in the 1730s. And he was making fun of the governor of New York, the colonial governor, Governor William Cosby, and he was jailed for it. And eventually, the jury refused to convict. And that is, as Governor Morris, one of the founders, later said, the germ of American freedom is the idea that you got the right to make fun of your leaders. That's kind of the whole point. So I appreciate Donald bringing up 250 years later. Here we are. We got to protect that right.
Plus, once again, the government seems well behind the curve on this. If you really want to curtail free speech by telling ABC it cannot hire and use Jimmy Kimmel, it's wrong, but it's also useless because we have these terrestrial broadcast stations that are controlled or licensed to broadcast by the FCC. But they're a minuscule part of the ecosystem. Now, when you look at streaming platforms, which are not licensed, when you look at social media, which is not licensed, when you look at print, which is not licensed, it seems to me that this is like blowing out a candle in a stadium lit with electric light of 500,000 watts. Free speech is outlined in the First Amendment as follows. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. It goes on to talk about the right to assembly and redress of grievances with the government, etc. But it says Congress shall make no law. But will we seem to be in a time when Congress passes very few laws, and most of the stuff coming out today are by executive orders, which the president views as laws, and which the Supreme Court seems increasingly eager to uphold. Legally, is there a way around the Constitution if Donald Trump decides to issue an executive order limiting free speech, Will?
Sure. Long ago, about almost 100 years ago, the court interpreted the First Amendment to also bind the states, quote unquote, incorporation via the 14th Amendment, case called Gitlow v. New York. So the textual limitation to Congress making no law, really in modern First Amendment jurisprudence, that's the entire government, whether it's your local town hall or the president. And no, executive orders are not an end run around the First Amendment. In fact, to the discussion earlier as to what comes next, just this week, the president, again, seizing upon the tragic assassination of Kirk as kind of pretextual justification, issued a bizarre and sweeping executive order against quote-unquote Antifa, which of course is not like Al-Qaeda or Hezbollah. There's no Antifa headquarters where all the Antifa members hang out. It's basically, as I understand, an anti-fascist ideology, but it will be used, that executive order will be used, no doubt, mark my words, as justification to shut down speech on the left broadly, not only by the federal government, but more particularly by state and local actors. Right now, we're in court challenging a ban at the Texas A&M system on drag shows. And to install this ban on drag shows, which are protected by the First Amendment, students have an absolute right to engage in drag shows. The university leadership invoked an earlier executive order on quote-unquote gender ideology. So in other words, this broad ban on Antifa, this broad executive order characterizing that kind of speech as contributing to domestic terrorism is going to be invoked by lower officials to censor protected speech that they don't like.
So I have about 2 minutes left, and we need to talk about something else that's going on in the zeitgeist that really could make all of this a minor point. It used to be a rule by the FCC that a company could only own 7 a.m., 7 f.m., and 7 television stations. That went out of the window with along with the Fairness Doctrine and the equal time provision during the Reagan administration. And we have these corporate behemoths now that control much of what America listens to on the radio and sees on terrestrial TV. At the moment, owners can only have a footprint that reaches 39% of the total households. Brendan Carr wants to increase that. And if he approves Nexstar's merger with Tegna, which has a station here in Charlotte, their reach will be approximately 80% of the country. They have stations in 132 of the nation's 210 TV markets and in 44 states plus Washington, D.C. We have that going on. We have the merger of Paramount CBS. We have Larry Ellison now talking about taking over TikTok and adjusting the algorithm and also buying Warner Brothers and CNN. That would be owned by the Ellison family because it's father and son. Adam, with all these conglomerates, is that setting us up for curtailment of free speech? Because they, not the government, they will be deciding what we see and hear.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Will made this point earlier. When you have this much corporate consolidation, it becomes very easy for the government to extend its control over people's speech by giving, you know, a single pressure point that they can exploit. So I think, you know, whoever the next administration is going to have to look seriously at anti-monopoly actions to ensure that market competition in this space persists rather than becoming, you know, a few companies owning everything.
Adam Serwer is a staff writer at The Atlantic who wrote the article, "The Constitution Protects Jimmy Kimmel's Mistake, Free Speech is Under Assault." Will Creeley joined us, legal director for the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, and Donald Bryson, CEO of the John Locke Foundation. Thank you all for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.